The headlines: Iran rebukes the U.S. for its attempt to remove the Islamic Republic from the U.N. Commission on the Status of Women. Britain is bracing for more disruptive strike action as the rail and maritime unions reject an offer from operators. And Moscow says a price cap on Russian oil exports will not affect its military campaign in Ukraine. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. Tehran condemns the U.S. attempt to remove Iran from the U.N. Commission on the Status of Women, calling it illegitimate. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani says Washington is trying to block independent states' rights to a free vote in international bodies. Kanani says Iran earned membership in its commission after a recent voting session by the UN Economic and Social Council. The spokesman says the U.S. move questions the legality of such mechanisms in international bodies. The U.S. is pushing a draft resolution at the Council to remove Iran from the UN Commission on the Status of Women. The country has just started a four-year term on the body. Tehran has repeatedly warned that some Western countries are exploiting human rights for their own political means. Journalist and political commentator Said Mohsen Abbas joined us earlier for comment. He said the U.S. uses human rights as an excuse to invade countries and incite a so-called color revolutions.
So this is, it has no real basis because America has long used human rights as a beating stick, as an excuse to go and invade countries, to create color revolutions, to do regime change. And this is no different. I mean, using particularly the notion of human rights for women is an old, very Islamophobic trope. It's an Iranophobic trope because what it implies and what it hints by trying to block Iran from having its rightful democratic say is that these people are actually not part of our garden, as it were. They're part of the jungle. These are the barbarians. And I think it's a hugely insulting move by the Americans, but then they're at a desperation point where they're hypocritically accusing Iran of anything and everything under the sun in order to get it to come to heel over all sorts of issues, like, of course, the JCPOA nuclear deal, in terms of also being more subservient in all ways to the World Bank and all the other kind of the money mafia that exists out there. But if America and anybody wants to look neutrally at America's execution of human rights in its own shores, well, you'd see the hypocrisy there quite openly.
Israeli forces kill yet another Palestinian in the occupied West Bank. The Palestinian Health Ministry says a 23-year-old Omar Mana was shot at the Edeshine refugee camp near Bethlehem this morning. He was reportedly hit in the chest by live fire. Six others were also injured by Israeli fire. Hamas resistance movement slammed the Israeli regime over extrajudicial killing of the young man, promising that the Palestinian people will stand steadfast in the face of Israeli aggression. Meanwhile, Palestinian factions in Bethlehem have declared a general strike and a day of mourning. Israeli forces have been killing Palestinians in the occupied West Bank almost on a daily basis. The regime forces have killed more than 200 Palestinians in the Palestinian territories so far this year. We earlier asked our West Bank correspondent Mona Kandel about the details of the latest Israeli raid.
Israeli forces raided the Tehesha refugee camp in Bethlehem to conduct an arrest campaign. This is according to a statement issued by the Israeli military. The Israeli soldiers stormed a number of houses in a Tehesha refugee camp. Of course, Palestinians have resisted the incursion or the raid of the Israeli forces to Adhesha refugee camp. Clashes took place between Palestinian youths and Israeli forces. As you have mentioned, 23-year-old Omar Manaa was shot and killed during this operation. Six others were wounded as well. And the Israeli forces arrested three Palestinians. Two of them are brothers. The Israeli military accuses those Palestinians who were detained in a Dahisha refugee camp that they are engaged in a number of anti-Israeli activities. Elsewhere in the occupied West Bank, another raid had taken place to Jenin area. This time, the Israeli forces, unfortunately, succeeded to arrest Palestinian activist and fighter. He is the son of Bassam Assadi, the senior leader of the Jihad movement, and he's also a Palestinian prisoner in Israeli jails. The Israeli forces said the main aim to Jenin incursion is to arrest the son of Bassam Assadi, the senior official of the Jihad movement in northern occupied West Bank.
Britain's Rail and Maritime Union rejects the 4% pay rise proposed by train operators to end the highly disruptive strike action by rail workers. The RMT union says the offer does not meet its criteria for securing long-term job security for its members. Last week, the union said more than 40,000 workers would stay strikes in December and January, signaling major Christmas disruptions. The union also organized major industrial actions that caused massive disruption in the summer. Britain has witnessed a series of walkouts across different sectors over the last months. The government is now considering using military help to fill in for striking workers ahead of key walkouts by nurses and ambulance staff. Our correspondent in London, Robert Carter, joined us earlier with more details on rail and maritime strikes in the UK.
Negotiations are happening behind the scenes, and there are, of course, many issues, not just pay, that are being discussed here. Things including, like, how long a pay increase can be implemented, because sometimes it can be over a number of years. So things like that, there's a lot of details to get through. I think what's most important to mention is that these talks have ultimately failed so far, and that there is serious strike action being planned throughout the month of December, with future strikes also on the horizon in January as well, just after the new year. So absolute chaos is expected to take place if these talks don't actually make any progress at all. And it's not just rail unions that are preparing strikes for this month alone. There are also NHS and ambulance driving unions which are planning strikes on certain days in the midweek of December. There's also a major postal strike action which is being planned again in the lead up to Christmas. It's an important time of the year here for the British economy as packages, parcels, businesses are in full swing. And of course, all of these key sectors are basically shutting down their operations, which are going to absolutely cripple momentum during this Christmas month at a time when Britain's economy is trying to bounce back and to get itself moving again.
Britain's Labour Party has vowed to abolish the upper chamber of Parliament, or the House of Lords, as part of a constitutional revamp if it wins the 2025 general elections.
Labour will rebuild trust by reforming the centre of government, cleaning up sleaze, nourishing the relationship between central government and the devolved authorities, and replacing the unelected House of Lords with a new, smaller, democratically elected second chamber.
Starmer called the House of Lords, quote, indefensible. He said the move will be the biggest transfer of power from Westminster to the British people. The blueprint for reform was drafted by former Prime Minister Gordon Brown, but the latest pledge comes as the country is suffering from economic turmoil and a cost of living crisis. The draft is yet to be discussed, and if agreed upon, it will be incorporated in the party's election manifesto. The House of Lords includes a mixture of political appointees and hereditary peers, as well as senior bishops. And a price cap on Russian oil exports announced by the European Union and the group of seven developed countries has come into effect. The Western move is aimed at limiting Moscow's ability to finance its war in Ukraine. The European Union has also banned all imports of seaborne crude from Russia, apart from placing $60 price caps on Russian oil. The measure, jointly taken by the EU and the G7, means third-party countries cannot use Western tankers, insurance firms, and credit institutions if the cargo is sold at a price higher than the designated ceiling. The Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov says the price cap will roil global energy markets further, but will not affect Russia's ability to fund its military operations in Ukraine. Peskov says Moscow is preparing how it would respond to the move. Russia has said that it will not sell its oil to countries that apply the price cap. We earlier discussed that the latest Western measures against Russia and its energy sector in our news review program. Let's take a listen.
News Review regular deeper into some of the top stories of the day. Well, joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have Jerome Hughes, who's joining us from Brussels. Also, we have journalist, activist, and political analyst John Bosnich joining us from Belgrade. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Jerome in Brussels. Walk us through all the details that we need to know about this EU and G7 imposed price cap on Russian oil.
That's right, Bardia. Well, this is sort of the latest pressure from the West, so to speak, to try and apply more pressure on Russia. And as you mentioned in the introduction, Russia has said that, you know, it won't recognize this cap, and it's even willing, it says, to reduce production if necessary. Well, you've heard from Vladimir Zelensky as well, the Ukrainian president, who says that this has shown weakness from the West because they wanted, or he wanted, Ukraine wanted a cap of, at least $30 per barrel of oil, or actually just a complete ban on Russian oil altogether. That's what they would have wanted. Because actually, if you listen to what the industry experts are saying, that, you know, before the war in Ukraine, Russia was typically selling its oil for around typically between $55 and $65 dollars per barrel of oil. So, you know, this cap of $60, it doesn't seem to be maybe having the desired effect, especially when you have a case. I mean, you mentioned about the G7 countries and the EU countries. Those tankers won't be able to go above this cap. But actually, Russia itself has plenty of its own tankers. And you already have the likes of China, which has said that it is happy to go with the status quo with its current arrangements with Russia in terms of its energy supplies. And of course, China is a major customer, it's a major consumer of oil. So actually, you know, the EU and the G7 countries are saying this is designed to try and stop Russia's war machine. Well, actually, you know, in terms of what we've seen so far with all of these energy restrictions that they've tried to impose on Russia, well, actually, one of the main beneficiaries so far has been the United States, because it produces plenty of its own gas and oil. So it's been able to sell gas, for example, liquefied natural gas, to the EU at huge prices. So actually, it's doing very well. But the bloc that's really struggling are the 27 countries of the EU that are really struggling to find energy at a reasonable price.
Mr. Bosnich, give us your thoughts on this recent price cap. Russia has already said that it won't abide by it.
Well, obviously not. Oil is one of those commodities that literally flows in the direction of the markets which are willing to pay for it. And if the European Union is going to put another nail in their own economic coffin, they can do so. Because what they are going to do, in effect, is to make sure that they will not be receiving any Russian oil that they had hoped to receive. And so their own efforts to punish Russia will once again boomerang on the EU, thereby accelerating and worsening the crisis that they're already facing. You couldn't have made a worse decision. that's the best way to describe what the EU is now.
All right, thanks a lot, gentlemen. Jerome Hughes, our correspondent, joining us from Brussels, and thanks to journalist John Bosnich joining us from Belgrade. With that, it brings us to an end here on this edition of the News Review, but do stay tuned. There's plenty more to come.
Sudan's military and civilian leaders have signed an initial deal aimed at ending the political crisis in the country. The deal provides for a two-year civilian-led transition towards elections. It was signed by Army Chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and by multiple civilian groups, including the Forces for Freedom and Change. That is the main civilian faction that was ousted in last year's coup, which triggered the unrest in the African country. The coup led to more than a year of mass protests against the military. Over 120 people are said to have been killed in the ensuing protests. And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Leaders meeting with besieged volunteer forces. On Saturday, 26th of November, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had a meeting with hundreds of members of the besieged volunteer forces at the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya in Tehran. In this program, we discuss the leader's speech and points of views expressed at this meeting. Please stay with us. Saturday, 26th of November, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had a meeting with hundreds of members of the besieged volunteer forces in Tehran. The leader greeted the besieged volunteer forces by saying, "Welcome, my dear brothers and sisters. You are the young, brave members of the besieged. You have illuminated our Hosseiniya with the besieged spirit that exists within you. Praise God. I would like to congratulate you and all the people of Iran on the occasion of Basij Week." The Basij was one of Imam Khomeini's greatest initiatives. He announced the establishment of an army of 20 million in the country in his famous speech in November of 1979. Basij volunteer forces were established in 1979 after Imam Khomeini's announcement. The blessings of the Basij and this great initiative were so great that Imam Khomeini delivered that outstanding, eloquent speech in praise of the besieged volunteer forces in November of 1988. I will quote a few of Imam Khomeini's eloquent sentences so that you may remember that our dear Imam addressed the besieged in that speech in the same way that a father would express his love for his children. The Imam said, "The besieged are a school of love and an academy of anonymous martyrs who chanted the call to martyrdom and bravery from its lofty minarets. This is splendid discourse. What excellent phrases," the Imam said. "The Basij are a fruitful tree whose blossoms spread the aroma of springs joining together the freshness of certainty and the story of love. Imam Khomeini went on to say, "I take pride in being a Basiji myself. I would like to kiss the hand of every single one of you." These were the truly unforgettable words of Imam Khomeini. May God bless his soul. You members of the Basij today are being addressed by this statement. Imam Khomeini did not say the Basij of the 1980s. He said members of the Basij. You and all future generations were being addressed by the late Imam. May God bless his soul. In further remarks, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said, in his statement of November 1988, Imam Khomeini announced the importance of establishing a Basij for university and seminary students. There is a special meaning behind this. He told the university students and the students of religious sciences to have Basij groups and to be mobilized. This means that Basij is not just a military organization and that Basij should be present in all fields, including in sciences and in religious studies. The leader went on to ask, what is Basij? Basij is a culture, it is a discourse. Basij is a way of thinking. What is this way of thinking? What is this culture? This culture means serving society and the country without any pretense or expectations. This is very important. It means serving without any expectations, without waiting to be praised, and in many cases, without receiving any funds or provisions to do something. After all, every movement requires provisions, but they enter various fields without such things. They serve selflessly and accept the risk of their service in the path of the Almighty. This is the Basiji culture. But what is the meaning of Basiji culture? It means going into mud up to your knees to remove the mud from houses that have been flooded. It means putting yourself at risk of getting infected with COVID and risking your own life to save the lives of people suffering from COVID. Basiji culture means never getting tired when helping others. Basijis do not wait for others to praise them and to say well done. They provide this valuable service throughout the country. The Basijis have been successful in science, research and the laboratories. These were young people who worked in the fields of science and research, and there were those who had Basiji spirit or worked in laboratories, whether it was for COVID or for other issues. Our nuclear martyrs are an example of this. They were Basijis. Another example is the late Dr. Said Kazemi, who established the Royan Research Institute for Stem Cell Research and Genetics Research. This is the culture of the Basij. When facing the enemies on the battlefield, they are fearless. The Basiji culture is one that has been built by self-effacing, hard-working volunteers, as stated by the late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul. It is a culture of humble, undaunted fighters. It is about serving all the people. It is about serving the country. It means making sacrifices for others and even being oppressed in order to save the oppressed. Turning to recent events in Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei said, you saw how in recent events in the country, the Basijis were the ones being oppressed while protecting the Iranian people from oppression of a group of rioters who were either unaware, misled, misguided, or foreign mercenaries. Basijis stop the oppression of others. They do not allow themselves to become despondent. This is an important quality of Basiji culture. Despair has no meaning for someone who is part of the Basij. Praise God, we have millions of official Basiji forces and millions more who are unofficial volunteers. That is, there are the young people in mosques, universities, associations, schools and other places who do the same things as the Basiji and are in fact Basijis, but they're not official members of the Basiji organization. Alongside the Basiji phenomena in our country, we have the Basiji in the Muslim world. There are millions of Basijis in the Islamic world. They are Basiji who do not understand our language, nor do we understand their language, but we share the same heartfelt values. These are also the blessings of the Basiji. In further remarks, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "This is Imam Khomeini's legacy, which remains today, and God willing, it will continue to be with us tomorrow, and the country will see its fruits." Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, introduced the Basiji as a manifestation of the Shajaratul Tayyiba, or the good tree, which has also been mentioned in the Holy Quran. Have you seen how Allah has drawn a parable? A good principle is like a good tree. Its roots are steady and its branches are in the sky. It gives its fruit every season by the leave of its Lord. The nature of a good tree is that it produces its sweet fruit and gives results in every season. We already spoke about how the Basiji have the potential to move the country forward. I will now talk about some of the achievements of the Basiji volunteer forces. First of all, the presence of the Basiji in any period indicates that the Islamic revolution is alive. It shows that the revolution is thriving. Much of the dismay of those who are frightened and distressed by the word and the name of the revolution. They do not want the revolution to be mentioned. They express hatred towards the Islamic revolution and they reject it. But the presence of the Basiji volunteer forces shows the revolution is very much alive. It's blossoming and it's prospering. So one of the fruits of the Basiji presence is that it shows the regeneration and vitality of the Islamic revolution. The second thing is the spirit that I mentioned, the spirit of jihadi work, without expecting anything in return, without wanting to reveal your name, without being pretentious. This will create rapid progress in the country. Work that is done with the intention of impressing others in a pretentious manner has no beneficial value. Doing jihadi work without having any expectations will move the country forward. This is another example of the fruits of the Basiji. Third point is the element of spirituality is prominent in all activities that are taken by the Basiji volunteers, and this element of spirituality is very important. Further remarks, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "The Basiji hold a very important position in the political geography of the Islamic world, which I need to briefly explain. Of course, intellectuals, clear-sighted individuals, and you young people should focus on and think about these issues. Western colonialism has a certain line of approach towards this special region of ours, the West Asia region, or the region they call the Middle East. Following the two world wars, Western colonialism, Europe first and then the Americans, paid special attention to this region and established a distinct approach towards it. But why? Because it is an important region. The movements of the Western world's industrial wheels is dependent on oil from this region, from the West Asia or Middle East region. The world's main center for oil is here in this region, the region of West Asia. It links the East to the West. It is the region that connects Asia, Europe and Africa. This is the most important issue in terms of its strategic position." In further remarks, the leader of the Islamic Revolution commented on recent rioting in Iran and negotiations with the United States. The leader said, "Some people claim they understand politics, but it's really upsetting when you see their analysis in newspapers and in some sections of the social media. They say that in order to put an end to the rioting that has been taking place in this country for the past few weeks, you need to solve your problems with the United States first. Now, this is said by those who claim to know about politics and world affairs. They certainly state that you need to solve your problems with America, or they say you should listen to the voice of the people. I have seen these two comments in their writings. Solve your problems with the United States and listen to the voice of the people. But how can the problem with the United States be solved? This is the real question, and it is a very serious question. We do not want to argue with each other. We are asking a question. How can the problem with the United States be solved? Will the problem be solved by sitting down and negotiating and getting a promise from them? If we sit down and negotiate with the United States and make them commit to doing this or that, will the problem be solved? In further remarks, the leader said, they tell us to stop our nuclear activities. They start by telling us to stop 20% uranium enrichment. Then they tell us to stop 5% uranium enrichment. Next, they tell us to completely halt all kinds of nuclear activities. Then they will tell us to change the constitution of our country and to remove the Guardian Council. The US is demanding payoffs. If you want to fix your problem with the United States, you must continually surrender to US demands. This is what the Americans really want. Imprison yourself behind your borders, disarm yourselves and shut down your defense industries. What kind of proud, devoted Iranian is willing to give in to those demands? In concluding remarks, the leader wished success and strength for all members of the Basij volunteer forces, saying, the final victory would be ours.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Asad Jafari.
Cultivating an Islamic identity has been our ongoing topic. It's a massive topic. It's a massive undertaking. And we've talked about everything from the components of an identity, from the who-ness and the I-ness, to the power of thoughts, to the mind, body, and soul discussion. We then travel to the mawani' and the barriers of this identity, being this internalized Islamophobia, a fear of rejection, and of course the destructive power of doubt. That led us to two discussions. One is the need to be distinct, and one is the need of knowledge. It is important that we understand that all of this cannot be done without seeking the help of God. He's the wrapping paper in this whole gift. Turn to him, beg him, ask him. I know a lot of you. There's no enmity towards God in this room. Nobody here wakes up thinking, you know, I'm going to break God's commands. Watch what I do to God. Nobody does it. Everybody has this desire to be close to God. Turn to him and ask him, beg him. Believe in the power of dua. Because what I'm asking all of you to do and myself to do, like I said, is a lifelong mission. And yes, you'll have ups and downs. The very nature of faith is that it fluctuates. Don't be a little bit alarmed if you have those little bit low energy days when it comes to faith. That's okay. Provided, like I said, time and time again, you don't go crashing down. I don't go crashing down. Keep it within a happy medium. So tonight, I want to look at God. We got to change a little bit of the way that we look at God. That's why I said the very basis of this discussion is Tawheed. I talked about knowledge now a couple of nights ago. Before that, I talked about certainty. We can't just rely on my madrasa when I was 14 years old. That was 1 hour, 2 hours on Sunday. Even if you go to an Islamic school, it's not enough. We have to begin to build on that knowledge and begin to live the life, the harmonization of that life together. God is telling us with this idea of fad'uhu biha, that everything that you see as different elements of me is actually one. That's actually tawheed. So yes, when I call out Ya Razik, I don't realize it, but I'm calling out Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Ghafoor. All those Jamali aspects as well. He won't give us unless He loves us. He won't give us unless He respects us. He won't give us unless he accepts us. And He loves us. And He forgives us. It's not possible. He's bound by His justice. Nothing is arbitrary in the world of Allah. It's not like, okay, by chance, let me give Asr Jafri today. No. He's a merit-based God. Nothing is given to you based on your last name, your first name, Sayyid, non-Sayyid, this and that. No one's going to ask you in your grave what your last name is. I'm sorry. Or if you write Sayyid on your passport form or not. I'm sorry. I don't want to upset anybody. You have to earn that. I have to earn that. If that's the case, then yes. The very thing you're asking for is wrapped by His love. That's why the ulama say that eventually now, everything absorbs into His jamal. It's a matter of us looking at God as one entity. There are things that are, you know, that are part of the essence, right? I mean, I used to ask, you know, one passion of mine is teaching. I love teaching. I love it more than the pulpit. Give me a whiteboard, give me a marker. I'm very old school and I'm in my elements. And this discussion on Tawheed, whether it's, you know, my Sunday school students that I have that are 12 years old, 13 years old, or sometimes I teach, you know, a little bit older. I always ask them the same question. Can you make sugar salty? Can you make sugar salty? Can you? Bashir, why? Can you make sugar salty? Can you make salt sweet? Oh, can you make salt sweet? You can't? Why can't I add sugar to salt? Yeah. You can add sugar to salt, no problem. But don't call it salt. The definition of salt is its saltiness. You cannot remove the saltiness from the salt. You can't. That's what makes it salt. Trying to remove the NaCl equation, remove the Na, remove the Cl. You can't do that. Once it's mixed, it's mixed. Sometimes I think people like me try to separate these things from God. We can't. As much as you've convinced yourself that my bias of God is something negative, I'm telling you that even that negative has a positive built into it. Don't let shaitan infiltrate. There are some of you now who want to be accepted by God and you feel like He doesn't accept me. And that's a disrespect to God. I think sometimes that God wants to punish me. And flat out He says in the Quran, مَا يَفْعَلَ اللَّهُ بِعَذَابِكُمْ. What would I gain out of punishing you? Do you think I created you to punish you? You think that's what I want to do? You think I enjoy the fact that you're going through this hardship right now? That your mother is fighting cancer, I'm up there, what, enjoying myself? No. But I do understand that built into this cancer fight of yours is beauty. You may not see it right away, because sometimes when we're right here in the storm, we can't see everything else, but you will see it one day. We can't allow shaitan to enter our system and change our bias. It's one shaitan versus thousands of prophets. One shaitan versus 12 imams. One shaitan versus parents, grandparents, uncles, aunts, ulama, Quran, so many. To the point the Quran says, on the day of judgment, we'll say, God, it wasn't me, it was Him. He made me do it. The guy there with the red thorns and the pitchfork over there. He's the one. Blame him. He goes, whoa. Oh, it's not. No, I'm not. I suggested to you. That's it. I said, look, maybe try this. I gave you a recommendation. You accepted that recommendation. But then he says, all these thousands of perfect beings also recommended to you. Little old me now all of a sudden you're going to say yes to? And then blame me on top of that? That's why it's important, it's a balance. Worship Allah, shun shaitan. Worship Allah, shun shaitan. Two messages every prophet did. Right? لَقَدْ بَعَثْنَا فِي كُلِّ أُمَّةٍ رَسُولًا. Every nation we sent a prophet to, two messages. Worship Allah, at the same time parallel to shun shaitan. Understand your enemy. Dushman shinasi is very, very important. Recognition of the enemy is very, very important. Right? You're building and building and building a building of 20 floors on a very, very weak base. Floor 18, the building collapses. What's the point? Strengthen your base. Change the bias of God. But understand, even if you have a jalali, fearful bias of God, that can easily be turned into love and beauty. It's a matter of your vision. You know, Zulaikha is sitting there and she is the talk of the town. Ridiculed by other women. You are somebody who is, you know, revered and respected. This is a slave boy of yours. Why are you chasing him around town? And she knew that no matter how much she could try to describe the beauty and the husn of Nabi Yusuf, she couldn't. So she, of course, arranges for this event with all the women. And orchestrated beautifully. At the right time, at the right moment, he is to come out. And he is, of course, to bring them something, Yusuf. So they're all there, of course. Fruit is there. The knives are there. You've heard the story several times. Fruit is there. And out walks Nabi Yusuf. While they're cutting their fruit, they begin cutting their hand. Mesmerized by his beauty. They can't even feel the pain anymore. Yani the jalali aspect of cutting the finger succumbs to the jamal of Yusuf. To the point where they actually look at the beautiful and are reminded of the beauty. This is not a bashar or a man. He has to be an angel. No man is this beautiful. It's very possible that something that you think is trauma, that you think is difficult, actually is will get you to that source of beauty. It's very possible.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/EN.
In the limelight.
While millions of Americans lack adequate health coverage, the Pentagon has a new nuclear bomber to flaunt. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to Common Dreams, peace and economic justice advocates responded to the imminent unveiling recently of the United States Air Force's new $750 million per plane nuclear bomber by reiterating accusations of misplaced priorities in a nation where tens of millions of people live in poverty and lack adequate healthcare coverage. Military-industrial complex giant Northrop Grumman is set to introduce its B-21 Raider. The B-21, whose development was 30 years in the making and whose total project cost is expected to exceed $200 billion, is tapped to replace the aging B-2 Spirit. One thing the world definitely does not need is another stealth bomber, Vidya Benjamin, co-founder of the peace group Code Pink, told Common Dreams. Benjamin added, "This ominous death machine, with its price tag of $750 million a pop, brings huge profits to Northrop Grumman, but takes our society one more step down the road of a spiritual death." Referring to Rev. Martin Luther King Jr.'s 1967 anti-war speech, saying, "Beyond Vietnam, a time to break silence," in which the civil rights leader called the U.S. government the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today. Noting the B-21's impending introduction, Canadian professor Christopher Stonebanks tweeted recently, "Hey, how's the good old USA doing on free healthcare, eliminating poverty, and accessible education for all? What? Oh, I see. They have a new stealth bomber. Okay, and their citizens are good with that trade-off?" The Pentagon, which recently failed its fifth consecutive annual audit, is slated to get $847 billion in 2023 after Congress rubber stamps the next National Defense Authorization Act, possibly as soon as this month. That's more than the combined military spending of China, India, the UK, Russia, France, Germany, Saudi Arabia, Japan, and South Korea, according to the National Priorities Project at the Institute for Policy Studies, IPS. Meanwhile, CNBC reported most American workers dream of a comfortable retirement, yet many find their money falls short of meeting that goal when they reach their golden years. Much of the problem has to do with how the retirement system has evolved. Pension plans that used to guarantee a stream of post-career income from employers have given way to 401k plans and other retirement accounts that put the responsibility on workers themselves to save. Recently, private and public industry leaders came together in Washington, D.C. at an event hosted by the Employee Benefits Research Institute to identify ways to better help workers avoid a shortfall. U.S. Secretary of Labor Marty Walsh recalled how his father, a construction worker, retired with a pension, an annuity that has enabled his mother to remain financially stable when he died. "There are too many Americans who don't have that future stability," Walsh said. "Having a retirement plan is an essential component of a good job," he added. Yet many Americans don't have any retirement savings or plan at all, and many of those workers are approaching the end of their working careers, Walsh said. For people of color, the situation is even more dire, he noted. Just 36% of black households ages 55 to 64 have any retirement savings, and that number goes down to 30% for Hispanic households. Those that do have savings often have very little set aside, according to Walsh. "This is a crisis that we have to address in the United States of America," Walsh said. As many as 57 million Americans lack access to a workplace retirement saving plan, said Ed Morphy, president and CEO of Empower, a provider of retirement services. Murphy said, "We know that if people aren't covered by workplace savings, they don't save. If they don't access through payroll deduction, they just flat out don't save." Employers that do not offer retirement plans include small businesses like daycare centers, hair salons, auto shops, and restaurants that are just trying to make it work, Walsh noted. The lack of retirement plan coverage presents an opportunity for the financial industry and government to work together to find solutions, Walsh said. For too long, the message to workers has been you're not saving enough, and that may be true, but that's certainly not the whole story. California is one of a handful of states that has implemented automatic individual retirement accounts to help bridge that gap for workers who lack access to retirement plans through their employers. The program called CalSavers opened in 2019 to employers with five or more employees. Those that opt out are required to begin offering their own retirement plan per California rules. CalSavers is seeing positive results, according to Katie Selensky, executive director of the program. About 65% of employees who are automatically enrolled in the program stay in.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Current world order will be replaced by a new order where US is isolated, Asia powerful, resistance front expanded. This is the part of a speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with students on Wednesday, November 2nd, 2022. This meeting was held on the occasion of National Students' Day and National Day of Fighting Against Global Arrogance, which are commemorated on the 13th of Aban, 4th of November. Ever since the Industrial Revolution took place and the Europeans started advancing and colonizing other countries, they made the people and the countries of the world get used to the fact that submission and dominance are two inevitable corresponding parts of the world. This means that the world is split into domineering governments and countries and states that can be dominated. This has been the situation, and this domination system has been around for several centuries. Everyone agreed that they should accept the domination of Western powers, even their culture and appellations. Let me say this here. I have said it before. They call our region the Middle East. What does the Middle East even mean? It means that the origin and center of the world is Europe, like the story about Mullah Nasruddin, where they asked him where the center of the world is, and he replied, "The place where the nail of my donkey's reins are pounded into the ground. That is the center of the world."
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Any region that is far from Europe is called the Far East, because it is far from Europe. Whichever country is close to it, like some North African countries, are considered to be in the Near East. Those that are in the middle of these are known as the Middle East. That is the basis for naming countries by Europe. That is how Westerners were so self-entitled. This is why I insist on not calling the Middle East, but West Asia instead. It is in West Asia, after all. Why should we call it the Middle East? The Islamic Republic was the one who formed the spirit of showing resistance toward the tyranny, power-seeking, and hegemony of the domineering powers. The first person in the world to say neither East nor West was Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.